We now focus on the Knysna fire and the latest developments on that particular front. We're joined on the line by Knysna Fire Chief Clinton Manuel. Clinton, good day to you and welcome to the program.
Hi, Yusuf. Thank you and good evening to your listeners as well.
Thank you for joining us. Has the report managed to show the cause of the devastating Knysna fire?
Yusuf, yes. We've managed to scientifically find the most probable cause, one should say, where the investigation and the evidence that we collected on the ground and reports from other people that actually point us to the most probable cause.
There are two theories at play during investigation. The first is the fire started in the non-V area and caused by lightning. The second is the fire started in the V pattern area and is possibly man-made. Why was theory one ruled out?
Largely because when one look at the spread of a wildfire, it forms a distinctive V pattern. That's the only way how we're really looking at fires that spread from an area, and we know that fires spread outwards with lateral sides as well. The second, and this is probably the most important part of ruling out theory one, when one consider where the possible location could be in the non-V area, and one consider the prevailing winds early morning at about 1:09 the morning of the 7th of June, then the fire should have spread to a ridge which we now know does not show any burn scar, if one consider that location and the wind that was blowing. If one compare that to the section that's got the V pattern in it, then it stands to reason that where the fire spread to, it spread with a south-southwesterly wind behind it, and you can clearly see the pattern of spread where it spread from that particular section. And that section also presented the V pattern with the lighter fuel that's being burned first and then into heavier fuels. And those were the primarily the reasons why I had to discard the non-V area and opt for the origin being in the V area.
Now, scientific analysis showed that the fire probably started with pine cones clearly on a private land in a mountainous area called Ilanskral, but there are no pine trees in that area. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah, and particularly going back to the V section area, there is a clearing below, right at the bottom of the point of the V, clearing of about probably 4 by 6 meters. And within this clearing, I found the pine cones. And while there are no pine cones or pine trees in the immediate vicinity, the only conclusion that one could come to is that the pine cones was taken into that area. I think common practice is that when people make a fire, you turn the pine cone upside down and you light the top and use it as a fire light and have a stacked wood around it as well. And we particularly found evidence of such a fire. So that comes down to the probable cause of the fire, where we have the origin and as well the probable cause.
How badly was Knysna affected by the fires? What was the damage like?
Used to severely, eh? In terms of structures, we lost over 700 homes. That's formal and informal. In terms of your, because Knysna is well known for the timber industry, I think around about 22,000 hectares of timber that was lost. You think about job losses, it's enormous, and I think damage now currently probably stands at about 4 billion rand. It's going to take a long time for the town to rebuild in terms of those kind of things. So the loss in Knysna was severe. And then one also look at the losses of lives, because particularly from the Ilanskral fire, we lost 5 lives. The other 2 lives was lost in a separate fire, which is in the Kruisfontein area. So if one add all these things, well, then the damages, the losses, it's astronomical.
Perhaps you could explain to us the different wind patterns and how this could impact on a fire.
Well, what we do know in this situation is that from early morning, the wind was blowing fairly strong. And in the area where this fire originated, the topography of it is of such where you've got ridges, you've got valleys, And wind tend to change and form its own microclimate within those kind of topography. So somebody probably made a fire probably to keep warm, because remember we were predicting stormy weather, and we had the huge storm in Cape Town where Nisner had the strong wind, so somebody probably made a fire there to keep warm. And it's probably the wind that took that fire up and maybe made it out of control. Maybe the person even tried to put the fire out as it was spreading and was unsuccessful. So the wind played a critical factor, because had we not had the wind, then probably when somebody made a fire down there, it was raining, maybe cold, we would not have had this devastation. But the wind played a very, very important factor. It was one of the biggest contributors to the origin of the fire. Like I said, had there been no wind of this magnitude that we experienced, we probably would not have had this fire running out of control like this.
Is the NISDA Fire Department now better equipped in terms of fighting fires in the future?
Yes, sir, that's a difficult question. I don't think any fire service would have been properly equipped to fight a fire of this magnitude. If you will allow me to say it like this, that even later on, while we had all the resources, and I think as chief officer, I probably had the biggest fire service in South Africa here in Iceland, and probably in the world. I probably had about 1,800 firefighters, over 300 firefighting vehicles, 7 helicopters, 2 fixed-wing bombers, and yet the fire still ran away from us for a couple of days after, and we lost more homes while we had all those resources here. I think what one must understand, particularly with this fire, is that the Western Cape is in a drought, so all the vegetation is very dry. The second part is in Iceland we had the topography, and the third thing we had the fuel. Then we had, before these fires, we had those hot burgwind conditions for about 3 days before then. And then we had the strong winds on the morning of the 7th. So those five things somehow had to combine. And some way somebody made a fire, and this is what set the chain reaction in place. If one consider any fire department, and it doesn't matter how big the fire department is, you'd never be able to control a fire of this magnitude, because this fire was huge. And the area where it spanned into, all the way from Elandskraal, and the second fire at Kruisfontein, which spread all the way to Plettenberg Bay, it's a huge area. There just was not enough resources. Coming back to the other side, I think one need to look at fire services worldwide, and particularly in South Africa, probably need more investment, maybe to have a quicker response. Maybe looking at the other arms to the fire services world, which don't only deal with firefighting, but more in terms of fire prevention, maybe better town planning when it comes to your urban fringe with plantations. And so one need to look at all those kind of things and try and prevent fires, or should a fire break out, to say that, look, the fire will be confined in a certain area before it runs completely out of control. So there are other ways to looking at it as well.
Yes, a number of factors that all came together, creating a rather unique and peculiar situation, undoubtedly. We certainly hope there won't be a repeat of this. Clinton, we appreciate your time on Radio Islam. Thank you very much for sharing the information with us.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Clinton Manuel, NISDA Fire Chief, giving us the insight and sharing with us as to how they came to the conclusion that the fire was a man-made one. Whether it was man-made or it was a natural fire, I, for one, certainly think that the person who made that fire had no idea as to how far it would spread. That is something that I don't think anyone could have fathomed or envisaged at that moment.